everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Utilities. I'm your host, as always, Ben Lind, and I'm really pleased to be bringing you episode number 10. So it's been a while since the last episode, but it's definitely been worth the wait. I was joined by enterprise architect Stuart Mitchell. Now, Stuart has spent his entire career working across the water and power sectors, as well as spending a bit of time at one of the regulators. So that means he was ideally placed to take us through, firstly, what an enterprise architect is, how that job role functions, talked about the importance of balancing technological and enterprise goals of a business with the more day-to-day goals of the business, making sure that you're not too myopic in going down a sort of technologically driven route. You have to have that holistic view of a company, which I think is very interesting. We talked about the difference in attitudes to innovation spread across water and energy sectors, and Stu gave us a really unique opinion for what type of innovation he feels is going to be right around the corner. First time we've ever had that answer on Talking Utilities. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm sure you guys all will too. So with no further ado, please welcome Stuart Mitchell. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Utilities. As always, I'm your host, Ben Lind, and I'm joined today by Stuart Mitchell. Stuart, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, very well. Thank you, very well. So for anybody who doesn't know of yourself, Stu, and sort of what you do, do you want to give us a quick rundown, a quick intro to the man, Stuart Mitchell?
Yes, thank you very much, Ben. Yeah. Hi, Stuart Mitchell. I'm an enterprise architect for my sins, really. So I've worked across the water and electricity sectors over the last, I think really now, 8-9 years, something like that. Prior to that, I actually worked for one of the regulators as well, so reasonably close to the industry. Enterprise architect, really, which is an interesting position. It's a role that's happened over the last 10, 15 years before, and we didn't really have enterprise architects. It's one of these newfangled roles almost, really, in that respect. So my job is to, I suppose, really provide a line between business strategy and technical strategy, and make sure those two things absolutely intertwine. But it's also to try and give some sense of direction of travel as well. So be that business innovations that are coming down the track, but also technical ones as well, and make sure everyone's got that longer term vision going on. Really, that's kind of, that's really in a nutshell what enterprise architecture is about.
That's what the role entails. Yeah. It sounds kind of like the perfect, well, you know, like the perfect double-edged sword, in the sense, because I think on the one hand it must be quite nice to have, I suppose, the ability and the visibility of everything and sort of being tasked with trying to marry that up, but then at the same time, like, from a, I suppose, like, logistical perspective, like, it must be quite hard to marry the two, because certainly, you know, as I've come across it, you know, technological goals and business goals, they can often be at sort of two separate ends of the spectrum. So how easy is it to sort of marry up that kind of thing?
It's not always easy. When you've got a business imperative for instance, for delivery, you know, you've got to get something out there. You sometimes need to go down a tactical route because you need to deliver something quickly or achieve an aim where there's a real business pressure on that takes you off course from where you want to go in the longer term strategy. And again, be that a business or a technical strategy. So sometimes you have to fill in the dots elsewhere, really, if you like. There's a balancing act. You can't be overly purist about it. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a sense of pragmatism about it as well. And you know, personally, I don't always get that right, and it's always a learning process as well. But there are certain times where you've got to say, no, I'm not going to be purist about this. I'm not going to say we should really do that. There's something coming on the track that's more important, that's more urgent as well. So sometimes you've got to bend a little bit to make sure you get the longer term goal.
Mm-hmm. And what would be sort of a good example of one of those times, Stu, just to kind of like, just to quickly sort of take us through, I suppose, like what the thought process needs to be?
So sometimes you get some kind of regulatory change that needs to come in quickly. So for instance, not all organisations, and I have to say not one that I've worked for, but I wasn't able to embrace GDPR quickly, and that kind of came down the track quicker than expected. And there may be a longer-term strategy to open everything up, so make sure everything's visible and accessible where possible. Now, I've always had the Data Protection Act, so that kind of should have been in place anyway. Mm-hmm. But we sometimes had to put controls in place that otherwise would have been a lower priority. And in the interest of opening things up and making things accessible to all, we had to clamp down. So there's a period of people going through the data sets and making sure everything was clean and tidy, exposed in the right way or not, as the case may be. So that's where something came in from a little bit left field. A lot of organizations where they had to make some kind of change in patch pretty quickly. Other things might be, you might get ahead towards the end of the financial year and spending is required. So you might need to get on a quick move. Yeah, what can we get in? Because we need to spend that money. That often happens in utilities. Mm-hmm. You've sometimes got to say, yeah, we just need to do that now, and then let's come back to pulling things back onto the strategic track later on.
Okay.
It's all manageable, though.
Well, I should certainly hope so, because you know, a job that's been around for, as you say, kind of the last sort of 10, 15 years, I would certainly hope that there's people who have sort of walked the beaten path, as it were, and sort of established a mm-hmm. blueprint for what success looks like in that role. And you know, as you say, I mean, increasingly now, certainly in my work in utilities and energy, you're seeing this, you know, you're seeing this role, you know, sort of enterprise architecture being really, you know, pivotal to a lot of what they want to do. And it, you know, from what you've said there, it sounds like it's not just a case of having that foresight when it comes to, you know, transformation and more innovative processes, but it's also about being able to be reactive to things that come in as well.
Yeah, very much so. And it's one of the hardest things sometimes to describe what do you do as a job. I'm sure a lot of other people have that as a problem as well. How do you explain on the elevator pitch thing, you know, what you do as a job? And yeah. It's quite, I'd say it's more of a broad role than it's a deep role. You know, if you start to get involved with the detail of things, you quite often get sucked into people's avenue, if you like, and you've kind of got to lift yourself up to being spread across the organisation, the enterprise, rather than going down a particular formal, as it were, really. Easily done, but not easy to describe.
Yeah, and does that work? I mean, just because this, I'm curious to ask this question. Does that work sort of counterintuitively? Because when I think of, you know, if you think of the route that you need to become, say, you know, technically proficient as a developer or somebody who might sort of be more engaged on that side of a business, that lends itself very much to sort of a soul discipline and being sort of quite a purist in that regard, whereas you then have to switch mind frames and take in this sort of more holistic view of a business. So how do you balance that?
It's that's a really good point, actually, that, because it's quite easy to go down, I suppose, a rabbit hole to some extent. And a lot of architects are kind of what I've described T-shaped. So they'll be really good at one particular kind of vertical discipline, and they've got history of, let's say, software development or, I mean, mine is kind of like GIS mapping, you know, like that kind of something. So that's my vertical downwards, if you like, really. Okay. But you've got to kind of lift yourself up out of that detail and try and kind of spread yourself across. And you're absolutely right. The temptation is always to go down into the detail. You sometimes got to remind yourself, I can't do that because I'll just get waylaid and somehow enjoy doing. So, yeah, you've got to sort of pull yourself out of that. And that's also kind of advice I'd give to people who are, you know, sort of looking at software development and looking to do something more across the organisation as well. It's, you know, great to sort of like have a vertical that you're really good at. People will always call upon your expertise for that. Mm-hmm. But it's also good to get out there and understand more about, you know, your own business and, you know, how you can help across different parts of it as well.
Yeah, and that sort of, you know, having that you know, all-encompassing view, I suppose, leads me nicely into my next question, because you're sort of in the unique position of having worked both in water and in energy sectors, and obviously given that this podcast is sort of about innovation within the two, I would be curious to know sort of what's been your experience of attitudes towards innovation, and is there, say, has there been an observable difference in your experience?
That's a cracking question, that. So, yes, one of the first things... So I've kind of gone from water into power. One of the first things I noticed, and this sounds really daft, but power travels a lot faster than water. Okay. So you can kind of take certain advantages of the fact that in the field of water. So, for instance, you can switch things, I suppose, because water travels a lot more slow than electricity does. Whereas in electricity, it's funny, there's fewer moving parts. So there are fewer things to switch out when things tend to work, you know, over the longer term. In electricity than they do in water, where you've always got movement and travel and rust as much as anything else. involved with water as well. And of course, it's more two-way as well. You've got water and you've got wastewater as well. So, you know, power, yes, you've got the circuitry and everything else, but it tends to be one single kind of environment everything's wrapped into as well. But yes, there's a lot of commonalities in there as well. So, and a lot of this is driven by the regulator on both sides, where there's a demand for innovation from all of the companies involved. There's a demand to say, how are you going to be different? How are you going to be different from your competitors? Both areas have got this simulated competition thing, it's probably fair to say, really, between the two that's imposed as best as possible, it's probably fair to say, by the regulator as well. So companies will seek to innovate because you've got this idea of, you know, the ladders effectively of both both utility types. How do you get, you prove innovation? How do you start to look at what's happening outside the field and bring it into it as well? There's some cross-collaboration always goes on as well. In fact, what's interesting is where you look at water and power companies that aren't actually in competition with each other. Some sharing of ideas can go on there as well. So there's a lot of opportunities for innovation, I'd say, really. And also bringing information and ideas from the outside as well. I know one particular company I worked with, they looked at things inside, for instance, the banking sector. So some ideas have been applied here. How can we pull these into utilities as well? So it's great to look inside your field, and it's good to look outside it as well.
Mm-hmm. I would completely echo that. I mean, a lot of the people that I work with, kind of across the water and the power sector, it's often the financial sector is one that's held up as being, I suppose, the ambassadors for, you know, embracing a more digital first ethos. I think that, you know, maybe they were there 4 or 5 years ago, and I think maybe now we're seeing, you know, kind of utilities Definitely. And energy sort of following suit. And, you know, I if you look at it, you know, I think there are some very, very applicable learnings, because ultimately, you know, people want their money to just be there in the same way that they want their water and power to just be there. And, you know, a rather simplistic view, you might say, but yeah, I mean, I think that across, you know, let's say, you know, managing assets, that's going to still be important for them. Obviously theirs is probably going to be a little bit more digital than physical, but, you know, people, the way that people interact with their service provider, much in the way that they interact with their bank, was always going to change given, you know, the increase in how digital people are and how much they come to expect sort of a digital first methodology when it comes to reaching out. I think that one thing that I'm keen to sort of ask someone who's been in both water and power is, when it comes to, again, in your experience, Stu, when it comes to innovation, the things that I tend to speak to people about, and the projects that that myself and Hedgehog Lab that we get engaged on, often tend to be customer facing, and they're the ones that I suppose it's more easy to focus on when you come under this sort of digital transformation / innovation umbrella. Whereas there must be lots going on internally as well. So what in your experience has the split been like?
That's a cracking place to start, actually, because traditionally people think of digital and transformation, it's what does the customer experience look like and how does it feel for customers? So on that side of things, as traditional service providers, water and power companies have often figured pretty highly in customer service indexes and scores and such like that. Attitudes to customers are obviously going for more of a digital experience now. So I don't really want to talk to you on the phone. I want to talk to you via an app or something like that. And water and power companies, and energy companies as a whole, are moving down that road, which is great. And they're kind of, you know, feeling that now. Again, the regulators are starting to push down that road as well. But that is very much digital outfacing that most organisations think of as digital. You're absolutely right. Inside utilities, you've got the whole digital inners as well, which figures a lot stronger, I'd say, really. So digital inside, digital at the core, however you want to say it. It's the digital transformation of utility companies is not just the customer-facing stuff, it's the innards. So that means things like, for instance, making use of emerging technologies around IoT. Just echoing back to the last podcast with Kevin, he's some cracky points on that as well. Where you're bringing that data in, how it lives, for instance, at the edge. So edge compute starting to get really focused now. We're going to get a stage soon where our own data centers are not going to be big enough to cope with the influx of IoT generated data that's going to be out there. So we've got the clouds that are coming as well. We've got, so that's all part of internal digital transformation. And it's making sense of that as well. So do you start to go down the road of saying, I've got all these sensors out there, traditional telemetry in both water and power sectors as well. How is it going to be more meaningful? How do you make it far more impactful to customers so that there's far less need for outage or cut to supply? How do you start to become more proactive and more reactive? And that's what all the digital transformation thing is about internally. And of course, you've got all these emerging technologies that are coming around now, around AI, machine learning, RPA even as a tactical choice. There's a lot of things that are starting to emerge. All the utilities are starting to take notice of that, which is great. But it's fitting it into this big picture, so this digital inside, and this is where hopefully enterprise architecture has got a real part to play. And it's about seeing that holistic picture where you've kind of got on a butterfly effect, where you've got a sensor reading somewhere at an outpost on your network somewhere that feeds into some kind of analytics capability, which has the long-term effect back on the outside, the digital outside. Customers have got that, you know, that relation between data at source and how it affects customers. There's that trace all the way through it that's data orientated. And I think when we start to look at digital transformation, that's the most important thing, being in control of the data, understanding it thoroughly, and ultimately providing the best customer experience on the outside, because you've got a real start-to-end flow of information and the ability to react.
Spot on. And what types of things then, what are some common mistakes that you see people making when they're looking, specifically when we say to implement technology, let's say, because I think that, other mistakes are probably going to be quite unique to the individual business. But so say, you know, when we're looking at mistakes that people make when implementing technology, say, what are a couple of sort of common mistakes that you can think of?
So I think before you start to assess what technical landscape you're going to have as a company, you almost need to work out what you aspire to be. Mm-hmm. So as a scale, how innovative do you want to be? Do you want to be absolutely inventive at the front end? Or are you quite satisfied with where you are with the very kind of process-oriented utility capability that you traditionally are? And where you are on that banding then kind of dictates what kind of technical decisions you're going to make. And it's when you get that mix wrong that it doesn't work. So you may be an organization that feels very safe around, let's just say, traditional big IT. So if you get to a lot of utilities, of course, everyone's got these big systems, obviously named, but that's the way we've historically done IT. The direction of travel now is less around big IT, and it's more around adaptability, fluid IT as well. So particularly as we start to head into, I suppose, the 2020s, we've got to start to think of ourselves, what's the expectation of customers? What's the expectation of direction of technology and where we're going to have, for instance, scarce resources, where new marketplaces are going to open up? And you can't be stuck in a technical landscape which doesn't allow for that adaptability. So I think some of the mistakes that may have happened in the past, or just the way things were, don't allow for that level of flexibility and adaptability going forward, really. There's some great patterns that are emerging now around how to conduct and to invent your IT. I mentioned cloud before. So the classic modal Gartner's bimodal one, where you've got these big smooth records at the back end and you've got the ability to engage your customers a lot better at the front end. So things like apps, great user experiences, dashboards, all that kind of thing. That's tailored around how your business wants to use it as well. And good business process engineering that's agile as well. Those are the emerging things that if you kind of stuck with more lumpy, let's say, older technologies, it's harder to do. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the mistakes people make is feeling secure with that big IT approach. You're starting to see more companies, as I say, looking at smaller IT, more adaptability as well. So for me, I think now we're at a turning point where people aren't doing that anymore, the big stuff. And so we've got the opportunity now to do things at much more smaller, faster rate, adaptable, more incremental IT approach now. So that's the mistake, I think, falling into the previous way of doing things and not looking at the future enough.
Painting yourself into a corner, so to speak.
Absolutely that. It doesn't help anyone.
No, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right in what you say, in that the attitudes of the market has changed as well. You know, you see such diversity in how people want to, you know, do different things, you know, interact with you as a business, pay their bills, you know, register complaints, call maintenance people out or anything like that. That, you know, as you say, if you have a big sort of cumbersome, rigid legacy system that doesn't allow for, say, iteration and sort of rapid development and adding in the features that the research and the feedback from your users is telling you that's required, then you know, then you can find yourself in a bit more of a challenging situation. And then, you know, the flip side of that is that we're seeing not only sort of a rise in these you know, smaller quote unquote challenger brands in the energy sector in particular, you know, who are first and foremost tech companies and utility suppliers second. I mean, don't get me wrong, again, that comes with risk, and we've seen, you know, 10 or so you know, unfortunately not make it over the last sort of 9 months. But I also think that this is what I'm seeing as well, is it's kind of giving rise to sort of the software as a service model into utilities. And, you know, you're seeing a lot more customer engagement platforms coming to the fore now, and also quite interestingly as well, and is sort of predictive technology around sort of debt management and things as well, because that's you know, that is such a huge part of the industry that that doesn't often get talked about, but of course does play such a huge part in you know, in the unfortunate closing of a lot of smaller suppliers.
Absolutely, yeah, and I the way I try to paint it out is, I think it's incumbent upon companies to, and it sounds a bit of a strange way of putting it, to create the terms and the environment in which you can engage with the companies that can affect you best. The way I paint it out is like a noughts and crosses board. So the noughts and crosses board is the idea that we can engage as an organisation with multitudes of different organisations and companies. We provide the terms of engagement, both contractually and technically, that means you can bring on third parties very easily to create whatever solution you want, and then it can move on to the next one. So you're not wrapped up with really difficult ways to engage and integrate with people as well. And the more you can do that, the more you can embrace smaller companies, you've got quicker throughput and all that kind of stuff. And it also means you can engage with, you know, more B2B relationships as well. So when you're talking to different kinds of partners, for instance, the electricity industry is about to hit the DSO model as well. That's going to be far more B2B style relationships are going to be required in future. How do you do that? You've got to kind of present yourself as an integration, make it easy to integrate with you as well. So there's all those steps we need to start to take.
Yeah, absolutely would agree. I think that that's all right. We got that last answer, so we'll go with a new question. Skype normally, to be fair, right? Skype's normally the better one for this. Okay, so. So, Stu, as an enterprise architect, you've touched on the fact that collaboration plays a massive part in your role, especially sort of within different departments in the same business. Have you experienced many challenges where that, you know, you are kind of pulling in two separate directions, or do you find that often the business will be aligned with the goals of the enterprise architect as well?
It's a good question, that, because a lot of the kind of reticence comes from the traditional idea that architects are fist banners on tables, if you like. Right. There's this kind of idea that the gatekeepers and tend to be a little bit blockerish, if you like, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I suppose modern enterprise architecture is geared around the fact it's less around governance and more around guidance. So if you can set things in place early on, so it's things like establishing principles and reference architectures, as we call them, guidelines like that, then projects are less likely to go off-piste, mm-hmm. and you're more likely to get success. And that kind of breeds its own collaboration with the business and the business partners as well, because, you know, everyone's kind of heading in the same direction. You're not perceived as this blocking part of the organisation where, you know, so much work's been put into design or something like that. It comes to design authority and somebody says, no, we're not doing it that way. I think that's what people are scared of, if you like, really. And they have, you know, I've certainly met with challenges in the past where that's happened, and you can kind of feel sorry for the business when it's like that, when there's been an investment of time and an effort and cash, you know, to get things so far. So for me, the best way around this, I'm not saying I've got a perfect answer to this at all, but would be to establish as many principles, guidelines, and so on. And you do that in collaboration with folk in the business as well. So they've got more buy-in into it, and they understand the reasons why it's a mutual benefit to everyone. And if you can get people to do that, I think there's far more chance of projects being a success in the first place and making sure things go an awful lot smoother. It's really about putting grease on the wheels, if you like, rather than putting brakes on.
So much of what you're saying there, like, really resonates with sort of a lot of what I feel my job is. You know, I think that there's quite a lot of similarities, it seems, between sort of this enterprise architecture and sort of, you know, myself as a consultant, I suppose, in that, you know, you need to have kind of that 360 view of things. You have to get sort of the opinions and feedback from a lot of different departments, aligning the goals to make sure that you understand, as you say earlier on, sort of what the appetite is towards risk, whether we're going to be going for, you know, sort of moderate, heavy, or very low risk, you know, and then making sure that the not just the goals are unified, but also, like, I suppose the deliverables and the tangible benefits are going to be spread across the business rather than just one sole part of it, you know. It sounds like a very interesting role. It's just the technical element of it, I think, scares me a little bit, but yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a great role, actually, because, I mean, one thing is, you get to meet a lot of people across the organization. Mm-hmm. So the more kind of broad you get, you can meet people with different interests, motivations, and, you know, it's a lot of it's around sitting down with people and discussing their motivations, working out what they want, how you can help them. For me, the greatest chance of success, and I'm not saying I get this right, is the more you can sit down with people, engage with them, and work out what they want, how they tick as well. And that's perhaps the most interesting part of the job. It's not a technical one. It's more about drinking cups of coffee with people at the end of the day.
That's one of my favourite things to do. So cool then, Stu. So quick, another one from me, if you would, please. So as you look at both sectors, say if we take a holistic view of both sectors, and we look at, you know, in quotation marks, innovation, yeah? What would you say is the one or are some of the innovations that you can see that would offer a great level of benefit, and whether that be from a customer experience perspective, a business efficiency perspective, whatever it might be?
Oh, so if we go kind of, we talked about digital at the front and the back end. So if we go kind of back end first, so some of the innovations that are happening now around, for instance, transmission and collaboration. So you're starting to see new technologies around, we talked about IoT. Mm-hmm. So the ability to send stuff is getting an awful lot cheaper. So historically, we had all these big telemetry outstations that cost quite a lot of money to put in. And a lot of this has been driven by the consumer level stuff, like Raspberry Pis, for instance, things like that. The cost of sensing equipment is being driven right down. But you've got to weigh that up against things like reliability and cost of replacement, things like that. So a kind of a more pragmatic approach is to say, well, we've got this hardened operational technology set. There's a more softer approach for it. So you kind of augment information that's coming in through these softer and more consumer level devices that are able to communicate over, you know, traditionally inaccessible areas. So I mentioned about NB-IoT coming in and being able to use that as a transmission technology. Small, cheap sensor devices and computing at the edge. So not everything's inside your data center. Some of the analytics happens outside it as well. It's all part of this creating this big ecosystem, which is going to provide much more sensory information. You've got to work out what to do with it, but having a greater number of sensors is going to give people an awful lot more information that they can make the right choices on, and ultimately it takes you down the road of predictability, which means that the chance of something going wrong at the customer end is reduced. So everything around that is, I think, is the better direction of travel.
So Stu, last question, and it's one that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast. Do you have a big bet, shall we say, for what technology is planned to storm our industry in 2019? And I'll let you speak for both water and power sectors.
It's going to be a bit of a left field one, this. I think we're going to have to invent something that mitigates the chance of fake. Really weird thing to say, but as we start to create more sensor devices, more consumer input, the threat of what's going around is going to start to increase rapidly. So you're going to get more things around imagery that's invented, video that's invented, data that's invented. So the biggest thing we need to change and invent, in my opinion, the mitigation against that, and it will come out. But as we start seeing more things like fake news, fake information, that is going to have a real impact on the industry, and it's kind of cyber security in the extreme, if you like.
Yeah.
we're going to have to create stuff which absolutely mitigates against that. And it will come out because we'll have to invent it. And so I think over the next 5 years, that's going to be the biggest threat that we've got. How do you mitigate that against fake? So with everything that's going around artificial intelligence now, that's going to be the one thing that will mean that we save ourselves from what's going on in the outside world.
That is a very, very interesting answer. That's definitely the first one that I've had. That's the first version of that I've had. Yeah, that is a very, that's a lot to think about right there, isn't it? The idea that there's, you know, we could have almost fake data sets or something being pushed to simulate a failure or an over, you know, a surge in power or whatever it might be. You know, I think that, yeah, you start to think of all kinds of nefarious or espionage purposes that somebody might want to do that for.
Yeah, it's quite an exciting one. I could have said something like, you know, say NB-IoT or, you know, somebody invent another Alexa or something like that, but I think that's going to be the direction of travel over the next 5 years.
Unbelievable. Well, that's going to be very cool. I'm looking forward to keep an eye out for that one then. And we'll be able to say to people that they heard it here first.
Absolutely. You heard it first.
Absolutely. Stu, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Smashing. Thanks so much, Ben. It's been great.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, that was Enterprise Architect Stuart Mitchell, and a massive thank you to Stu for coming on the pod. Right, that's it for this episode of Talking Utilities, everybody. I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening. I know that there's been a bit of a gap between this one and the last one, but I assure you all that I'm working hard on getting some quality guests lined up. They do take time to come on, and I appreciate everybody taking the time out of their busy schedules to come and talk to me on the show. So yes, please be assured that we have some good ones right around the corner. For some more information on me and what I do, please visit me on LinkedIn. You can find me at Benjamin Lind. On Twitter, I am at BenjaminL1ND. And if you want to keep up to date with me outside of these podcasts for articles, for video content, for some summaries of where I've been and the people that I've been speaking to, you can follow the hashtag TalkingUtilities. All right, everybody, thank you all very much again for listening. I hope you're all well and healthy. And until next time, I'll speak to you soon.